Hello and welcome to week 9 of From the Basement Bar podcast. It's the last weekend in October, which means shit is about to get real. And I don't just mean the home stretch of the college football season, because that is, you know, truly, this is where the true contenders separate from the pretenders. And we actually saw a little bit of that this past weekend, which we would obviously get into here shortly. But it's also the last week before the holiday season truly begins. And once we hit that November mark, it's just a blur for the next 2 months. It really is. Turkey Day will be here before we even know it. And that's always just a shit show for me, at least on Thanksgiving Eve, you know, causing just the right type of hangover to be cured by a bunch of food that just knocks me back out. And speaking of a shit show, that coincidentally is now my one-year-old son's new favorite word. Yeah, fuck me, right? I'm going to have to get a muzzle for this child. I'm not even really sure where he picked it up. I just don't think I use the term shit show that often. It's not like something that's in my repertoire of swear words. I mean, I definitely use it, but I don't know when I would use it around him or when he would be hearing this, but he picked it up somewhere. I'm only using it now because he says it so much. I never thought he'd be the bad influence, at least not this early anyway, but here we are. I mean, if any word he was going to really pick up, I would think it'd be fuck. I mean, that just flies out of my mouth like second nature when watching sports, and that's what that's what he sees me do. We watch sports, we play sports. You know, I'm surprised that he hasn't picked up on that word. I pray that he does not. Let's hope that does. I mean, shit show, that's not that bad. It's really not that bad on the grand scheme of swear words. It's kind of cute in the way he says it too. So you know, he'll get you there. And I have tried to tone it down with the swear word usage. You know, this is because of my wife. You know, she scolds me every time with both her eyes and now her chain-locked panties that I apparently have lost the key to. But I am being conditioned to not swear. It's a slow process. It's a very slow process of unwinding all these years and years of being able to, you know, freely speak the words out of my mouth. But you know, those days are numbered. They're actually just gone until he gets a little bit older, and then it'll be acceptable again. But for once in like 15 years, this Thanksgiving Eve is looking like it might be a toned down night. You know, now that I'm such a responsible father and all. But you know, unfortunately, all it really takes is a few texts of a promise of a good time and that little bit of alcohol to hit my lips. And we do have a full-blown shit show on her hands. But I think my will is stronger now. I really do. So we shall see. Only time will tell. But then, once we have digested our Thanksgiving break, it's just speed skiing right ahead into Christmas. Which I'm cool with. I'm cool with that. Christmas is by far the best holiday there is. I enjoy getting gifts. I just really do. That's even at the ripe age of 30, I'm still a selfish, gift-wanting brat child. Oh, now the cool thing that I have a son, his gifts ultimately become somewhat mine too. I truly believe I get equal joy out of his toys as he does. I mean, they're all sports related, so it's so easy for me to also participate in playing with these toys, and I thank the heavens every day I had a boy and not a daughter. The gift simply would just not be as fun. They just wouldn't be. Like for this year, I just went out. I just go to Dick's Sporting Goods randomly now, just looking for things that I think he could use now or in the future. So I'm just constantly in there browsing. You know, the aisles, and I came home with a hockey net with these little targets on it. I already have a full half hockey, like, rink in my basement right now. It's a mini hockey net with boards that create a half rink. So now we're going to have we just cleaned out our garage, and I was like, oh, this looks like the perfect place to put a hockey net. and just ruin all the, you know, the plans my wife had with all this now, you know, cleaned, nice space in our garage that we worked on for an entire day over the weekend. So it's going to be filled with a hockey net. I can't wait to use it. I hope my son likes it too, because it is his gift ultimately. But also, you know, unless you're working retail, it's basically 2 free months off work, actually, we have coming up. I mean, no one actually works. Let's be real. These final 2 months, no one's really working. We pretend. We do the bare minimum, but it's all just bullshit. We get by. Well, we just say we're saving all the hard work, you know, for those New Year's resolutions that last a few weeks in January. That's what we're really doing. It's just there's too much going on. The Thanksgiving break, and that just, you know, once that hits, it's just done. Game over. If you didn't hit your sales marks, if you're in sales, you forget about it. Forget about it. Just enjoy the holiday season. It might be the last one where you can actually buy good gifts for your children. But let's just not get too far ahead of ourselves here, actually. I'm rambling off too far into the future. We still have Slut Weekend on the horizon, and Instagram should be a very fun place here in a few days. You know, I really like to take in the artistic creations of these costumes. It's all for the art perspective, of course. So let's just sit back, crack open our drink of choice, and let's get the Halloween weekend started a few days earlier. And tonight, I'm going with a beer. I got a PBR, some Pabst Blue Ribbon, the original, the American beer. I love PBR. It's just a timeless beer. I will never stop drinking PBR. I get it at the bar still. I'll get it if they have it on draft. I love a PBR. I'm enjoying my PBR. And actually, so it kind of goes with my Halloween costume. I'm dressing up to take my child out trick-or-treating. It's not like I'm going to some fun Halloween party. But I actually think this will be even more fun. You know, that's the dad in me, I guess we're talking here. I don't know where that came from. But so my Halloween costume, he actually is obsessed with trash, anything trash. Like, he spots a trash can from literally a mile away. We'll be anywhere. We'll be going to a brand new playground with all the coolest shit you could possibly think of. Kids running all over the place, and he will just beeline. He'll eyes locked in on the trash can. And all he says is trash, trash, trash. And he's right there to it. So we're dressing him up as a trash man. I built this little trash can thing. We spray painted it. And he's going to be wearing the little waste management outfit. But me, going with the trash theme, I got myself basically trailer trash bullshit, this mullet hat that says like America. It has two beer cans that you can sit in the top with the little hose that you can stick in your mouth so you can drink it. And then I got this like full on like fanny pack suspenders type of thing with a little beer pouch on the side pocket. So I'm rolling around with my PBR, of course, because that just fits the theme. So that's why I'm my PBR tonight. Just getting ready for it. So, yeah, I'm basically being trailer trash. He's being a trash can. Not sure what my wife's doing. Maybe she'll. I mean, we. I'm the one that usually trashes it up, so maybe she'll be keeping it classy like always. But PBR on deck for tonight, waiting for the trick-or-treating, where, of course, I'm going to have a few beers, you know, and then I'm going to eat all his candy because we don't really let him eat sugar anyway. So it's all, that, again, his gifts become mine, his candy on Halloween become mine. That's just life. That's just growing up, kid. He's going to have to get used to it. So that's our drink of choice tonight, Pabst Blue Ribbon, the original American beer. So let's take a look back at the week that was, last weekend's games. It was a pretty good weekend. As they've been for quite some time now. We haven't really had a down weekend this year. It was a lot of expected wins, but a few that I got wrong. That's for damn sure. A few that hurt me pretty bad. So we'll discuss these. The Ohio State Iowa game, not much to talk about there. And we'll talk about quarterback CJ Stroud later for Ohio State. But Iowa we knew they couldn't score enough points. Their defense did their best to hang in there early, holding to some field goals, but it was just an explosion then, 54-10. That's kind of what we expected. I was just not that good. I mean, they literally have no offense. No offense at all. The most boring team in college football. The Clemson-Syracuse game, I had circled this one. If you listened to our podcast last week, I was super excited to see how this offense of Garrett Schrader and Tucker was going to match up against Clemson, and they did a fantastic job for the majority of the game, but then they allowed Clemson to come back. Once they hit the 21-point mark, they couldn't score another point. They had a double-digit lead. A double-digit lead on Clemson, and they couldn't close it out. They let these damn Tigers do it again in Clemson. Extend the longest winning home streak, I believe, at the fake Death Valley of the Clemson Tigers. But Syracuse almost did it, and Syracuse is a legit team. And I was intrigued by them a few weeks ago. I did discuss that. The offense, that running attack of Schrader and Tucker, it's tough to defend. They just couldn't, that last drive, Schrader just made a really, really bad decision and threw a terrible pick, you know, just right at the Clemson defender. It wasn't pretty. But Syracuse hung tough. Give them some credit. They fought there with Clemson, and Clemson's had some real close, tight wins. I just don't know how good they are. But, you know, when you can win these tight, close games, they're going to figure, they figured it out. They figured out how to win close games. So that awesome for them moving forward, because in the playoffs, it's going to be close. It's going to be tight, and you got to be able to figure out those games. So if you get them away out of the way now in the regular season, that's a big plus moving forward. Mississippi State, Alabama, you knew Alabama came out pissed. After that horrendous game against Tennessee, Alabama came out and did their thing. They looked like Alabama again. I mean, Will Anderson Jr., if you just look at the stat sheet, it's not going to jump out at you. It's not going to pop off. But that guy was all over the fucking place. He was an absolute menace in Will Rogers' face. Like, every time Will Rogers dropped back, he was causing some type of disruption. Will Anderson Jr. is by far and away the best defensive player in the entire country. He was last year, he is this year, and he's by far the best NFL prospect coming out this year. That is an NFL player playing college football right now. And it's something remarkable, the way he is able to get into the backfield, get to the quarterback. He was literally all over the place. He's unstoppable. And speaking of another defensive difference maker that Bama has now just unleashed, and they probably wish they would have had him against Tennessee, because the secondary last week against Tennessee was non-existent. But now with transfer from LSU, Eli Ricks, we're talking about a first-round graded cornerback just thrown into the Alabama secondary, and he made an impact instantly. He looked like a difference maker instantly, and we knew he was. We knew we've seen him play at LSU. This guy is fucking good. He has talent out the ass. He's not Will Anderson impact good, but he is, like I said, a first-round talent in the NFL. This could be something that could change Alabama's future moving forward, because we know they're a sloppier team than we're used to seeing. We know they're not the most talented Nick Saban team that we've seen before, but if this defense can be locked down like they were against Mississippi State and not get eaten alive for those explosive plays that we saw against Tennessee, Bryce Young gets healthy, Jahmyr Gibbs, I mean, we know that motherfucker just glides on the field. He's gliding all over the field. This Alabama team, you know, they get one loss under their belt, and they don't lose again. We've seen that before. We could see it again. It's going to be interesting to watch how this defense moves forward, because it was ugly a couple weeks ago against Tennessee. Mississippi State is they've just kind of also fell in off, and I was riding high Mississippi State for a little while, but they are who they are. That offense just won't be able to get it done against these high-level teams in the SEC. They'll still have a great year, you know, win 9 games, but they're never going to challenge Alabama like we kind of discussed a few weeks ago, where we said, hey, could it be Mississippi State? Could Ole Miss? Could they challenge Alabama? Could they legitimately win the SEC West? And speaking of Ole Miss and Mississippi State, no. No, because Ole Miss went out, went to LSU, and laid a fucking egg, and did what all pretenders do at this time of the year. They made us believe for like 7 weeks of this season, we're like, okay, Jackson Dart in this offense with Lane Kiffin figuring it out coaching-wise, doing his thing. Then they go and get blown out basically by an LSU team who is hitting their stride. LSU is hitting their stride, but Ole Miss, you were supposed to be better than 45-20. You're a pretender. That's what pretenders do. They go out and lose games like that. They aren't ready for big time. They'll probably end up dropping another one, maybe two more. TCU, Kansas State, big Big 12 matchup. TCU handled business once again. Max Duggan, I can't sing his praise any louder. TCU is a very good football team. A very good football team. They are in the driver's seat in the Big 12, and they are looking like a college football playoff team the way they're playing. Max Duggan is playing some of the most efficient, and literally, if you look at the stats, some of the most efficient quarterback play in the entire country. There's no denying TCU is a legit football team. 38-28 over Kansas State. Now we're at the game that hurt me. We're at the one that really hurt me because I said they better not make me look fucking stupid. I said it last week. I said, just don't make me look stupid. I've been riding you. I've been singing your praises. Not as loud as Max. Well, actually, probably louder. UCLA goes to Oregon. And I said Oregon would have a fast start. I did think Oregon was going to get out to a fast start because that's a tough place to play. They get loud in there, if for Pac-12 standards, that is. And UCLA is used to playing at their home games in front of like 14,000 people. So it was different to see fans in the stands, I think, for the Bruins. But Bo Nix, has Bo Nix figured it out? I mean, he might have. I've always said good Bo Nix is elite, but he's so inconsistent. He's been such an inconsistent quarterback in Auburn. But now, he looks different. He looks different. I mean, playing against Pac-12 teams is different than SEC. But Bo Nix may have finally figured it out after all these years, all this experience playing college football. Because since his opening weekend loss to Georgia, he has 25 total touchdowns to just one interception. That's not the roller coaster ride Bo Nix we're used to. He has 6 straight wins since that opening weekend loss to Georgia. And they've all scored 40-plus points in each game. Bo Nix has led his team to 40-plus points in each game since that loss. And they put up another 40 points against a UCLA team that I thought was pretty damn good. I still think UCLA is pretty damn good, but Oregon, with Bo Nix playing this way, We'll see. I would love to ride a Bo Nix train. I think he's an electric quarterback. I've just been sucked into this before, and I know he's been consistent. I mean, we just went through it. He has been absolutely 25-1 is very, very good. I'm scared to get sucked into the Bo Nix hype. I really am. Oklahoma State, Texas. Geez, Texas loves to lose games where they hold double-digit leads. They just do it again. And Oklahoma State stays there, stays up there with TCU, scratching their way, hoping for an opening. Texas, you know, they're just so average. So average. I love Bijan Robinson, and they're wasting the best running back in the entire country. They're wasting his talent down there. But Texas, again, they now have the most double-digit, like most losses after having a double-digit lead over the past two seasons. Five total times they have had double-digit leads and have ultimately gone on to lose. That's poor coaching. That's on Sark. That's poor coaching. And it's showing. You're an average team. That's another reason why I don't understand why Arch Manning picked Texas. Does he think he can go down there and fix poor coaching? The talent's not enough. They're probably going to waste him too. They're going to waste him in Longhorn Nation. What else did we have from this past weekend? I think that's all we got to touch on. I mean, those are some pretty substantial games that proved, again, we're starting to see who the pretenders, who the contenders are. I believe TCU's a contender. I believe Oregon's a contender. Ole Miss, pretender. Mississippi State, confirmed pretender. Syracuse, on the bubble. Still not sure if they're a pretender or a contender yet. Texas, clearly a pretender. Oklahoma State, contender. UCLA, on the bubble again. On the bubble, UCLA, after that Oregon loss. All right, so now we're going to move on to... we'll just touch on a few other things from this past weekend. So Shane Beamer had a ridiculous statement, you know, the head coach of South Carolina, who's actually having a fantastic year. South Carolina has pulled off some victories that most people did not see coming. I'm not even sure if Beamer saw these victories coming. But Spencer Rattler and the Gamecocks, you know, they just threw more fuel on the fire that Jimbo Fisher is sitting in currently for his job. He is coaching for his job. They have turned into a joke at Texas A&M. A joke at Texas. Under Jimbo Fisher, they are a joke. We went through the recruiting classes. We went through the talent that he has brought in there. And then we saw the results on the field. And they don't align. They don't align. You know, the guy can throw around money. He can't coach. The guy can throw around Texas A&M donor money. But he can't coach the talent that's on the field. It's clear as day. We're seeing it. They're going downhill very fast. Jimbo Fisher may lose his job. A cushy job that paid him a fuck ton of money. But South Carolina coach Shane Beamer, who is having a good year, just said one of the most ridiculous things. He called South Carolina's home stadium environment the best in college football. Now, I understand he's the head coach. You know, he has to say these type of things. Actually, he doesn't. He doesn't have to be that outlandish and that stupid. He was caught up in the moment. I get it. South Carolina isn't even close. It's not even on the radar of being the best environment in college football. I just had to get that out of the way. I get it. He gets caught up in the moment. You can see his post-game interview right on the field, you know, the knee-jerk reactions. He's so caught up in the moment. I love the passion. Don't get me wrong. The passion is great. But we can all be real now that the dust has settled, that we're moving on to next week. South Carolina does not have the best environment in college football. I'm glad he got to enjoy his time, though. And I'm glad, you know, he got to throw more fire on the Texas A&M shit show There we go. There's that word again. Shit show. Maybe I do use shit show more than I think. But that is also 9 straight games for Jimbo Fisher's offense where they score under 25 points. That's so bad. That is so bad. And he's had defenses that has allowed him to win a lot of these games. Imagine if he could coach an offense. Imagine. They'd be a pretty damn good team. Unfortunately, he can't coach. Talent, out the ass. Recruits, all over the place. Top level recruits. 9 straight games now, under 25 points. That's not okay. And what might be worse than Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M right now, and that's Miami, who had 8 turnovers against Duke. Van Dyke was benched again. Jake Garcia, who I like Jake Garcia. I think he's a good young freshman quarterback. It's not looking good for him down there, but at least not this past weekend. But Miami, 8 turnovers against the Duke Blue Devils. They forced 8 turnovers against Miami. Thank God they got rid of the turnover chain. They would have had to give it up to Duke. 8 turnovers is so bad. How do you turn the ball over 8 times? You might get like 12 possessions. And that's unbelievable to turn the ball over 8 times. But that is the shit show of my. That's just, we're just going to ride with the word, guys. Shit show is the word of the podcast. Miami shit show. All right, so normally we would I would jump into a scouting report for this week, but unfortunately, that is not going to happen this week. We will be back, I promise, next week. We will be back with the scouting reports. We did Israel Banacanda, so we did the running back. We got that out of the way. We did an offensive lineman last week, center for USC, Brett Nealon. And next week we'll see. We might do a tight end. Might be a tight end for next week. We'll see. No scouting report, so let's just jump into the upcoming games this weekend. Week 9 of the college football season. What an exciting season we've had so far. All right, so I'm recording this on Wednesday night. Utah will play Thursday, so tomorrow. Washington State has kind of come back down to earth. Since then, apparently you can get tickets for as low as $6 right now to that game. Utah is playing good football. They could be in for a tricky matchup, though, against Washington State. We've seen Washington State play good football. So at home, they might be able to scare Utah a little bit. But we have what will be billed as a big-time matchup, but it really is not. And let's just check the spread, because in my opinion, the spread should be 20. Spread should be 20 for this game. They have it at 15.5. So it's the Ohio State at Penn State. I guess they're giving Penn State somewhat of a leg up, not a leg up, but the benefit of the doubt here to not embarrass them with a 20-point spread because they're playing at home. But it's a noon game at home, so it's not like they're going to get the boost of a night whiteout against Ohio State. But I think we saw what Michigan did against Penn State's defense. Ohio State has a more prolific offense. Ohio State should trample Penn State. Like 52-17. We'll go like 52-17 over Penn State. Notre Dame-Syracuse could be a very good game. Notre Dame's playing better ball. Syracuse, let's see if they can bounce back. This is what I said. This is why I said Syracuse is on the bubble. Pretenders will lose this game. Pretenders will have that good, great game against Clemson, almost pull off the upset, and then they'll go and lose this game to Notre Dame. So can Syracuse become a contender, a true good team, or are they a pretender? We'll find out this week against Notre Dame. What else do we have? I mean, there's a few other games, but they're not even worth mentioning. Oklahoma, Iowa State, Arkansas, Auburn. Those teams just don't warrant the words to come out of my mouth. So, of course, we got to talk about this. I'm not sure if this will be a close game, but we're talking about the number one team in the country, and we're talking about the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. And that's Florida Florida and Georgia in Jacksonville, neutral site, as always, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. This is a rivalry game, so I do expect a close game for at least a half. I really do. I expect Florida to come out ready to play. I think Napier will have this team ready to play. 3:30, favorite time slot, the best time slot in college football. Georgia's talent level is so high, though. It would take Anthony Richardson times two of his Utah performance earlier this year to start the year. It would take that type of performance to even come close to pulling this upset off. But again, rivalry games are a different thing in the SEC. So we'll see. I think it will be a very good game for at least a half. It's also a great fucking time. If you guys haven't been to a Florida-Georgia game, world's largest outdoor cocktail party, get down there. Go do it. Tailgate's fantastic. The whole Jacksonville just like, it just engulfs that entire city. It's very fun. Oklahoma State, Kansas State. Again, can Kansas State shake off the loss of last week? They'll be playing at home. Oklahoma State looks like to be the better team there. I do expect that to be a close game. You know, 10-point at most 10-point game. Illinois, Nebraska. Nebraska surprisingly is playing good football, and Illinois even more surprisingly is playing ridiculously good football. But it's still two mediocre Big Ten teams that don't mean much. Illinois should still continue their winning against Nebraska. The Kentucky-Tennessee game is interesting for me. This just screams upset. Kentucky-Tennessee screams upset. I don't think Tennessee will see a defense as good as Kentucky's. I really don't. And I'm not sold on Will Levis. Like, I mean, I'm sold on him. I'm just not like riding the hype train that some of these people are talking about, like top 10 pick, like one of the best quarterbacks in this draft. I mean, he might be one of the best quarterbacks, but he's not in the grand scheme of talent level of quarterbacks. I just don't see it that Will Levis is, you know, that elite. I don't know why this hype train, you know, occurred. So, I mean, his size, good athletic ability, but he doesn't blow you, like the tape doesn't blow you away. But Tennessee, it screams a little bit of an upset for me. It really does. I could see Kentucky going in there and playing really, really good defense. Really good defense. And Tennessee, the Vols are just on a high right now. They're on a big high right now. But, you know, that drug might wear out. That drug could very well wear out against the Kentucky Wildcats. This will be a good game and the best game of the weekend. I'm telling you, Kentucky's defense will be able to slow this offense down. No one has yet, but they will. I'm not saying they're going to win. I'm saying it just screams upset. It seems like upset alert for the Tennessee Volunteers this weekend against Kentucky. Ole Miss, Texas A&M. If Jimbo Fisher wants to continue to be the Aggies coach, he better go out and beat this Ole Miss team at home. But Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, they know they have to come in and get a win here. Again, they're in the same boat. They're in the same boat as Syracuse. Will they be able to withstand the loss from last week, bounce back, and get things done? Or are they a pretender? We're going to find out if Ole Miss is a pretender. And we're going to find out if Texas A&M will have the same coach going into next season. And I think we'll stop there. I think that covers enough of the big games next week. I mean, I'm telling you, circle that Tennessee-Kentucky game, 7 o'clock. things could get real interesting in the college football world. And come on, let's hope for that. We want interesting. We want bedlam. We want chaos. All right, so the college football playoff rankings, the first ones will be released after this week once we get into November. But we're going to one-up them and do it a week before. We're going to get from the basement bar rankings, at least top five. We're going to at least do our top five right now. Right now, before the college football playoffs come out after this past weekend, or next weekend. And my rankings are as follows, in order. Number one, that team that I believe is on upset alert, screaming upset, right now, if we just take straight up body of work, who is the best team, who is the best resume in college football? It is Tennessee. Tennessee should be the number one team in the country if we just strip everything away and just look at what they've done and look at how they've done it and look at the quarterback play they're getting and look how efficient that offense is. Look how well Josh Heupel is coaching that team. Tennessee deserves the number one ranking. That doesn't mean that Kentucky can't upset them this weekend and blow that up. Number two is Georgia, the defending national champs. They got a big win against Oregon to start the season. Oregon's a much different team. I think that game would be a little bit closer. Bo Nix would play a little bit better than only being able to put up 3 points against this Georgia team. So I think that's an outlier. And then if you just strip that one away, who have they beaten? Samford? South Carolina? Playing better football. I did say that earlier. And they did it in apparently the best environment in all of college football, 48-7. Kent State, Missouri, Auburn, Vanderbilt, and they almost lost to Missouri. They damn well should have lost to Missouri. And Auburn sucks. They showed no fight in that game. Vanderbilt, they're Vanderbilt. The resume doesn't, besides being the defending national champs, nothing is screaming they should be number one over Tennessee for me. But I'll give them the benefit of the doubt because they are the national defending champs. So I'll go Georgia at number two. Number three for me is a team that I don't think is getting enough love. And I don't understand why, but it's the undefeated TCU Horned Frogs led by Sonny Dykes at coach Max Duggan. This team is playing good football, and they have a very, very good resume. They're learning how to win close, tight games, just like I said about Clemson. That matters. That matters when it comes crunch time later in the year. Those close, tight games that they're getting things done in now, well, they know how to win now. They have developed a winning strategy, and TCU Horned Frogs deserve the number three spot in the college football rankings. They beat an Oklahoma team who was ranked at the time. Obviously, they've fallen off since. They beat a Kansas team who was getting all the hype in the world. College game day was there. Yes, their starting quarterback went down, but they got things done in a hype-filled college game day type of atmosphere. They beat Oklahoma State. Big overtime victory there, double OT. And then they have had a very sound, good, solid victory against Kansas State this past weekend. That's a good resume, and that's deserving of a top three spot for me. TCU, number three. Number four, we're going to go Ohio State. The offensive firepower is out of this world. Their defense, does their defense do anything for you? That defense wouldn't scare me at all. But their offense is quite terrifying. CJ Stroud, as I've had for basically the entire year, number one in my Heisman rankings, he gets it done. He slings the ball around. They have great receivers. They have good running backs. That offense is scary. But again, resume doesn't jump out at me. They beat a overhyped Notre Dame team at the time. They beat an Arkansas State team. That's just a throwaway. Toledo, throwaway. Beat a bad Wisconsin team. Beat a bad Rutgers team. Beat a bad Michigan State team. Beat a bad Iowa team. Where on that resume does it look like they should be a top three team? I don't see it, and that's why they're number four. Number five for me is the Clemson Tigers, and that's because I believe their resume is better than the others. Clemson deserves the five spot because they're winning these close, good games. They're learning how to win tight games. Now, DJU was pulled this past weekend. That's not a great look, but Dabo put his full support behind him. So I don't think there's any controversy there. I don't think there's any lack of confidence that's going to be lost by DJ or Dabo in that scenario. But they've gotten good wins. That Wake Forest win was a very good win. Sam Hartman is very good. Wake Forest has continued to play very good football. NC State, not so good, but they did get a good win against NC State at the time. They're a bad football team now. Boston College blew them out. Florida State, they've been getting hyped up. I've never bought the hype of Florida State, but they beat a Florida State team that showed some fight. And then this past weekend, they beat a good Syracuse team, 27-21, after being down by double digits. They came back and got it done against Syracuse. So the talent's there. The coaching's there. They're winning games. Clemson deserves the five spot. So there we have it. There's the From the Basement Bar first rankings of the year, the top five at least. And now we're at the final college football segment of the podcast, the Heisman update, the updated Heisman rankings we have. And as it's been basically all year round, CJ Stroud stays atop my Heisman rankings this week. He went 20 of 30, 286 yards, 4 TDs, 1 INT. Bit of a slow first half, but then just absolutely exploded in the second. Excuse me, this PBR is putting me a little bit to sleep here. But then he exploded and got his numbers, did his thing. They blew Iowa out as they should. I expect the same. I expect better numbers, actually, against Penn State this upcoming weekend. Number two on my list is Hendon Hooker. He's been on my, right there on the heels of C.J. Stroud. They didn't play anybody this weekend worth mentioning, but he did go 18 of 24, 276 yards, 3 TDs, no picks. He got it done. He did what he was supposed to do, and he's been playing top-level football all year, all season. That's why I have them as my number one team in the country currently. Number three on my list is my boy from TCU making his way, finally making his way onto the list. I had DTR, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. It was between Max and Dorian Thompson-Robinson this past weekend. We saw what happened to UCLA. So clearly I was wrong last weekend. And Max deserved it over DTR. But we have righted that wrong. And now Max is number three on my list, 17 of 26, 280 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Like I said, an efficient motherfucker, and that's why TCU is the third-ranked team in my rankings. Max Duggan leading the way. Number four on my list, Blake Corum. Nothing to talk about with Blake Corum because he simply did not play, but I expect him to get back and do his thing this weekend when he does step onto the field. And then finally, number five, Bryce Young of Alabama. Coming back from injury, getting it done in a big way I don't know if he's ever going to be fully healthy. Well, he's just not. I mean, we're in the middle of a college football season, but that shoulder, he looks fine. But coming back, bouncing back from the Tennessee loss, Alabama did what we expected them to do. Nick Saban clearly lit a fire under their ass, and they went out and trounced Mississippi State. And Bryce Young went 21 of 35, 249, 2 TDs, 0 interceptions. Not like an otherworldly game, not going to blow you away there, but he did what needed to be done. He is the defending or reigning Heisman Trophy winner. So Bryce Young is hanging on there in the fifth spot. All right, so that is the end of this week's podcast. And as always, we're going to end with that one thing that I hate that is not college football related. And this week, it's really been on my radar slightly, but I've been using hand sanitizer more, not like my own little hand sanitizer that you buy and just squirt in your hands, but I'm saying like, you know, the ones where it's like the dispenser, where you're just walking around, you stick your hand in there, it comes out in like a foamy type of thing. Has anybody checked or smelled their hand after this? What happened to the smell of hand sanitizer? Is this just like me? Has my nose changed since I've had COVID? Like, did my smell just get fucked up? But I'm telling you, smell it. The next time you use one of those dispenser hand sanitizer, it's kind of fucking disgusting. And I like to use them, actually. Not too often. Because I don't know. I have this weird myth that, you know, if you use it too much, you become desensitized to the sanitize, I guess. But basically, hand sanitizer is starting to, it smells like a fucking, like, if you squished a stink bug and just swished it all around in your hand. You know the smell of a stink bug? That's what this hand sanitizer is doing. Did COVID ruin hand sanitizer? Is this like some new hand sanitizer that the CDC was like, this is the way to do it. This is how we get rid of COVID. Because it's another failure on their end. I just want that alcohol, strong fucking hand sanitizer smell. Where it just like burns my nostrils, but it hurts so good. It burns so good. It smells so good. That's what. Give me my fucking hand sanitizer back that doesn't smell like a squished stink bug in my hand. But there we are. There we are. We are officially at the end of this week's episode of From the Basement Bar Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @playbook_daily. Follow us on Twitter. Keep up with all our episodes. Like and subscribe on all whatever platform you're listening to this podcast. Again, From the Basement Bar. Thank you.